Welcome to Normalize Nudity, where we think, kink, and sink. I'm Sashada Rose. Are you ready to get naked? Let's strip. Welcome to Normalize Nudity. I'm really excited about my first guest. So I'm going to tell a super quick story about how we met. We actually met at this screenplay writing workshop at this library. I don't even remember what library, but somewhere in Atlanta. And I ran into you again at an erotic art show by Velvet Lene, like Bear It All. So I saw you there. And then I saw you again at this like art pop-up shop thing, and you had some photography featured there. And I remember one of your pieces in particular was this Black woman with a fro, and she looks like she's like floating midair. I don't know if you remember that piece.
I remember, yeah.
That really stayed with me. I was like, this man is talented. He's really smart. If you don't know what he looks like, he has this like immaculate salt and pepper beard. I was like, we're going to be friends. This is my friend now. So I'm super excited to introduce Brian Duane. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I didn't know I was the first guest. Now I'm all nervous.
No, don't be nervous.
But yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I remember each of the times we met, by the way. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's perfect. So tell the people a little bit about yourself. What do you do? Where you're based? Your socials, where they could find you?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm Brian Duane. I am the owner and primary creator for Black Touch, BLK Touch, which is a Black erotica website. So that basically features high production erotica that only features us, and so it's created for us by us. I'm in Atlanta, but I also travel for work. So like this month I'll be in Houston, next month I'll still be in Atlanta, but the month after that I'll be in New York. So I try to work with different people in different places and try to travel like to create the content. We can get into a little bit more detail about what Black Touch is and where it came from and all of that during the call.
All right, awesome. So I'm going to put in a request for you to work with some creatives in Boston, because that's where I'm based. So you have to pull up and come see me. Cool. So talk to me about how did you get your start and how did you decide to create like Black Touch? Like, where did the idea come from? How'd you name it?
Initially, it didn't start off as it is right now. My first, what happened was I'd been doing photography for years. So mostly implied nude photography of Black women. And that I probably was doing since 2016. I sort of like established myself doing that for a long while under the name Brian Duane. And at the very, very end of 2018, I did a photo shoot with a model here in Atlanta, or three models here in Atlanta. And it was essentially a polyandry shoot. So it was basically a woman with two men, and it was more sensual than anything. Like, now that I look at what I do now, I'm like, it was the most tame thing I ever did. But yeah, it's a sensual shoot that features a woman who's being adored by two men. And, you know, people will look and see what they want, but it was a very, very sexual shoot. And so I made that shoot at the end of 2018. At the beginning of 2019, it was published, and like, it was everywhere overnight. The images, apparently there aren't a lot of Black polyandry images out there. So it got memed out. People were making comments about it. People still posted to like images from there till today to sort of like spark conversation. There's like a whole polyandry page that like 80% of it is my pictures from that shoot. So it's interesting. It's cool. But what that did was essentially, because it was so different from the work that I'd been doing before, I realized I wanted to continue doing it. And because there was so much attention around the work, I wanted to have its own name. So I came up with the name Black Touch, BLK Touch. I started a feed and a website. And for about a year, I spent creating kind of like at my leisure, creating other photo shoots, central photo shoots featuring Black people, and posting it on the website. And the only thing that I asked people for was essentially their email addresses. So I just was building a mailing list for about the first year. So that's sort of where it came from. I didn't have like this grand idea to do video and stuff like that. That came later.
Okay, cool. So it started with the photography and it kind of grew into its own thing. So essentially you just went viral out of nowhere. I do remember that shoot. I know two of the three, not in real life guys, but I know two of the three people featured. I think one is Brother of the Night. And then the other woman, I can't remember her name right now, but I've seen her perform at different erotic shows as well.
Just several names. So like Wheat Bread was one.
Yes, Wheat Bread. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I remember that shoot and it was dope. Definitely inspired some fantasies of mine. I was like, this is it. Like, who doesn't want like two penises at the same time and being adored? Like, this is great. So how would you describe Black Touch? And I know it's evolved from how you originally started. So what is your goal for the platform now?
Yeah, so since that shoot had been published and I started doing more shoots and consistent, like getting more and more consistent, it was initially just all photos. So what I had this bright idea, I'm driving up to Alpharetta on 400 here in Atlanta. And it dawned on me, like, why couldn't I make like a video that sort of like ends on a cliffhanger? And it's like a sensual video and it kind of like gets to this point and people are like, what happens next? And, you know, the video will fade into go to blacktouch.com. And, you know, so that was the original reason for me to even take out to start recording video was to sort of promote the photo work. And I liked the concept of telling stories. Just like you said, we met at a screenwriting. I forgot that's what that meeting was. But yeah, we met at a screenwriting class. And so I've always been interested in telling stories. And so now this was like a more balanced way of like growing that interest as well as feeding the project. So I started off by creating like these little ads, like short clips. Until I was doing a shoot focusing on photo, and I had the video recording, and the models or the talent started actually having sex in front of me, which was the
unplanned?
First time.
Like it was totally unplanned.
Totally didn't discuss this. Wow. I had no clue who this person was. It turns out like they already did porn and all that stuff. And this was during a trip to New York. And it was so different from what I had imagined. You know, like we stop ourselves from like seeing ourselves in a different space until you kind of like force sometimes. But it was so different that I imagined that I had imagined the site to be that I actually shot it in like June of 2019. And I didn't release it till the beginning of 2020.
Wow. So you sat on that for some time.
Yeah, because I was afraid. I was like, oh, she's actually sucking a dick. Oh,
she's
sucking a dick.
She's going crazy.
Oh, my gosh. The website does not feature XXX right now. It's like mostly people pretending. And I make it look great. Like back then, I was trying my best to bring sensuality to every shot and for every angle.
Very successfully.
Thank you. But this was the first time that I actually created something that was explicit and real. I had to make a decision that this is what I wanted to do. So I made like this announcement. And after that, I just started creating more and more on purpose, creating more erotic work. And since then, you know, 2020 was me sort of like learning how to do video work and tell stories and work with people and production and all of that. And so by the end of 2020, I had a stack of scenes on my hard drive, like 14 of them. And I said, you know what? If I drop them.
Let's do it.
I can drop one every week and let's just see what happens. Oh, one thing I didn't mention is that like for the majority of the time, you know, between 2019 and 2020, the site was free. And then in about July of 2020, I decided to monetize it because It was taking up a lot of my time.
Yeah, you better get your coins. I'm all for that. Get your coins.
The motivation was just to create this work and share it. But, you know, I was like, okay, maybe I should start monetizing it, because now I'm the streaming costs for the video and all that stuff was stacking up. So I monetized it in July or June of 2020. And then in the beginning of 2021, I start this sort of campaign of dropping a scene every week because I had this surplus. And that was very a great strategy. Even though it was a lot to do, like, because for every scene you see, I've had to shoot it, organize it, like, you know, produce the scene, shoot it, edit it, market it, and manage the website at the same time. So like
a one man team.
Yeah, it was all just one. There really was nobody else. So and you know, I also do coding, so I have to make sure that the site isn't buggy and all that stuff. It's like the site literally was designed by me and posted and set up and everything, and I manage mm-hmm. it solely. So yeah, the site right now, where it is just it's grown into a XXX erotica site, but it's the at its heart is passion, connectivity between Black people, exploration, and really the heart of everything is erotica, like the our capacity to grow into a space to find our higher pleasure, which is something I can talk about a little later. But that's at the core of everything I do. So right now we've got a range of things where there's like a pregnant this pregnant video with a pregnant woman. There's lactation stuff.
Yes.
There is a squirt video.
Yes.
There's going to be like a soul blowjob video. There's going to be, this is just so much stuff now I can get into, but yeah. And stuff I'm planning that is about to be incredible as well. So that's kind of like where I am right now with the project.
Yes. So I know like the dropping every week is probably a lot for you, but I'm not going to lie. That email notification, the world stops. The minute it's like, bloop, black touch. I'm like, oh shit, new scene. What's the title? Oh shit. What's the clue? Let me get on Instagram. Let me see a little quick little preview. Let me get on. Like, it's a thing for me.
What?
I get really excited. It's cool to see you work with a lot of creatives that I also love and support their brands, and even people I don't know. And I can definitely second the diversity in the types of scenes that are showcased on your site. I, at least so far, no pressure. I don't feel like I've seen or been exposed to all the same things every time that I get on there. There was one time I was like behind a couple scenes and I was like, no, I need to catch up. I just binge watch Black Touch to get up to speed. You just dropped a new scene I haven't watched yet called Protocol, and it features two people who I absolutely love as well. So I can't wait. It's amazing.
Thank you. You know, it's always interesting because, again, it's just a one person thing for the most part. And I do get responses to the work on Instagram. And sometimes people email me, but it's really always kind of like shocking how much people have sort of adopted the project and like identify with the goal, you know, because really at the heart of it, I started the project because I didn't see anything that looked like this work that represented us. And so the fact that other people get it, and I could tell you, I got probably my most favorite DM this morning. And I'm going to share it with you. So
yeah,
I'm a horrible reader, but I'll do it live. Do it live.
Okay. You got it.
So yeah, I opened up my DMs this morning, and I'm not going to say who, because I said I'll keep it anonymous, but they said, good morning. I just became a member after finding you on Twitter. Excellent quality and beautiful Black content. It feels safe here. 62 years old woman. Allowing myself the freedom to explore finally. And she has like this smile emoji afterwards. And I was like, wow, look at that. Like, for real, I think probably my most favorite, because at the heart of it all is what erotica means to me. And I've been listening to Audre Lorde talk about the uses of girl. Erotica.
So Audre Lorde is my girl. So she's this Black lesbian poet, author, activist, womanist, so many titles, but all of her work has been centered around racism, sexism, classism, all these isms and homophobia. So she's published several works, including The Black Unicorn and Sister Outsider, but the essay that Brian is referring to is called The Uses of the Erotic as a Power. And in this piece of writing, she kind of talks about how women have been intentionally disconnected from our erotic power, and that because we have this disconnect, we are not having fully present, fully fulfilling live experiences because of that. And the things that have tainted our view of our erotic power is how we've been oppressed over time, as well as pornography. So my main takeaway from that reading was just that when you ignore and avoid your erotic as a source of power, it's detrimental to your life and your joy and your well-being and just being a whole person. And you, if you want to be fully present, fully yourself, part of that is tapping into your pleasure and your sensuality.
But yeah, it's about pushing yourself, like experiencing erotica. It's about pushing yourself to see what your capacity for joy and pleasure is. And when you recognize what that is, it puts everything else in perspective. It's sort of like, you know, you have a lover for the first time that really figures out how to like pay attention to your body and bring you to a place that you haven't been able to experience with anyone else. If you're not with that person in the next 3-4 years, at some level, you know what your capacity for joy is. So you start seeking it, and you don't allow yourself to go back to mediocre forever. You at some point you want to experience it again. And I think that's the, what, you know, based off of what Audre Lorde, you know, how she described it, that's literally what the goal of Black Touch is to help us experience higher levels of pleasure, to allow us to explore. So that's why I don't try to do the same thing over and over again. That's why I have like a, I'm gonna give you kind of so I just shot a scene where there's like no sex at all. Everyone's fully clothed.
Nice.
And there is hypnosis involved.
Very good.
And I was like, I was so intrigued. I was like, I need to find out, first off, if it's real. And if it's real, I need to record this shit. You feel me? So I did a whole session, and it was very interesting. It was also very interesting, but I will definitely be publishing that soon. But again, the work doesn't always have to be explicitly sexual. It's more about exploration. And so this felt good to hear that this woman, who's a little younger than my mom, is like telling me that she has finally allowed herself to explore. That's the point, you know.
Well, that's beautiful. I know that me in general, I have this like roller coaster relationship with porn. Like there was times when I watch it and then I'm like, this is not what I want to see. And I would always feel this feeling of like, this isn't what I want to see. Or I feel like Black women are often in a position of servitude to whoever is in the scene, or like gangbang this and ebony that. And it just never quite fit and always made me feel uncomfortable. And uncomfortable wasn't like I'm uncomfortable with like eroticism. It was like, it just didn't look or feel like this is something I wanted to be a part of watching or a part of my like pleasure ritual. But when I watched Black Touch, I also didn't like seeing scripted scenes for a really long time either. So I would lean more towards amateur porn, like, okay, I want to see something that looks real, that feels natural, that looks intimate. But when I watch Black Touch, I feel like I get all of that. And I get excited about like what the new theme is going to be, what the new story is going to be. And just seeing the people, they don't look rushed. Nothing looks fake. Everyone's taking their time. And it looks like genuine pleasure is taking place. And I can connect with that. So that's why I love watching it.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Yeah, that's all intentional, because we can get into why, like in comparison to like the mainstream.
Yeah, definitely going to get into that.
Okay, cool.
Let me slide in here really quick with a super brief overview of the history of porn. So pornographic materials has existed in a multitude of mediums for over 28,000 years. So the very first item or pornographic material was this little figurine sculpture called the Venus of Windroth. And since then, there's been all sorts of painting and pottery and literature scattered in different places, just showcasing sexual interests of the people of that time. But when we think about porn right now, we don't necessarily think about the sculpture. We think more modern, and we're in a digital era where porn kind of consists of videography, photos, audio, etc. And this came out of the Industrial Revolution. And so how porn has been depicted has grown and evolved over time as well. So back in the 1880s, porn was just considered a nude body on film. That was enough. In the 1920s or the roaring 20s, that was the first time intercourse started being captured and shared to represent porn. And then porn kind of went through this like dormant phase because, you know, America just be having the most going on, wars, all sorts of shit. But in the 60s, there was this sexual revolution. And from then forward, the porn industry has been growing. And we've been seeing it traverse into new spaces like virtual reality porn. And of course, what's considered porn and what's considered erotica is subjective.
So really quick, do you have a 9-to-5? I know you mentioned coding a little bit earlier. What do you do? Did you feel like doing this work with Black Touch was like a threat to your employment? Like, what was doing both like for you? What's going on with that?
Since 2001, I was a network engineer, which primarily means that I worked on the equipment that ties like the internet together. So initially I worked for H&M. And I was the guy who like configured their network equipment and tied their stores together and, you know, allowed for calls and credit card processing. That's what I had done for about 20 years. And I just moved from different job to different job, and I got paid well because there's not a lot of people who know it at the level that I was doing it. And on top of that, I was self-taught. Like everything that I tell you, like there was no like school or anything or certification behind it. It was me sort of like, through my desires in my 20s and my interests in my 30s, I just would learn things that gave me the capacity to like work in this position. So as of May this year, I have quit my job.
Woo! That's nice.
Yeah, and it's scary because like I have always been employed. I always had benefits. All of that stuff has always been in place. And I'm a very big person about stability, but I also have grown into a person who like learned to follow like the universe and spirit. Like I was very much a fearful person, you know, but I had this talent to like work this job for a long time. And all I could think about is what if, what if, what if. And, you know, with the growth of Black Touch, it was, something kind of came over me, and I realized I'm not living my full life. And truth be told, I'll explain it in the same terms that I was just saying. So erotica doesn't have to be about sex or sensuality. In the case with Black Touch and my job, I started creating Black Touch and working on it more consistently and feeling this level of completeness and joy in the work that I did, how much it impacted other people. The true like potential of it. It felt like I finally found the thing that I'm here for. Like I taught myself programming, web development, and I learned photography, and I developed an eye around video work and storytelling. And this sort of like is the perfect storm for that for me. And I was still holding on to this job, and I was doing it. And because I found this pleasure and I found the capacity for joy in my work, the job that I was doing was suffering. Mm-hmm. So even though it was good money and I was like getting double checks, you know, one from the business and one from that company, I also have integrity. I didn't want to continue to do that work. There's a couple of things. It was the integrity of not having, like not getting paid, you know, getting paid for something I'm not really doing well. Mm-hmm. And then the other was, if I thought like, if I'm doing this halfway,
what does look like?
Full. What does it look like if I put my
100%
down on the gas?
Balls deep.
Yeah, you know, like blindly blast forward. So, I took the jump, and it's a touch scary, but like you were saying before, when you were mentioning earlier, now my time is my own. Like I don't know, there's nothing I have to do right now. right? So now it's about like managing my own attention, managing my own schedule, and making sure that I definitely start hitting different things, and making sure I plan ahead so that I have shoots, and then making sure I'm completing these ones. And also, because there's so many parts to the work, I also am working on moving the planning segment into a full-time or a part-time position for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really the goal is that I'm not going to be the primary dude doing everything,
right,
but I have to create systems. So in the last couple of weeks, I've been working really hard on creating a system to first do compliance work as well as planning ahead. And I'm about to start finding a person that
could support that with that. Yeah, that's awesome. That your life goals. I just want you to know that. Life goals.
I'll put stuff in perspective. I'm 42. Wait, am I? Yeah, I'm 42.
I need you to know how old you are.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't pay a ton of attention. My birthday passes here. I'm like, okay, they did a quick number. But yeah, I'm 42. And for most of my life, I was gainfully employed. I was doing what I wanted to do, but I hadn't found my calling, you know. And I could say to myself, oh, and it was around 40 when it actually, I was like, oh, this is cool. Let me continue to do this thing. And then it was around 41 where I was like, whoa, wait, this could be
this a is my thing. Yeah.
Like, wow, I can live off of this, so on and so forth. So, you know, for anybody that's listening that feels like their time has passed or they haven't found their calling, continue to do the things that you love, right?
Mm.
And find a thing that you love and how it can serve other people. Because that's really at the heart of anything that's successful, is that there are people that need to hear that message and that need to see that your vision or need to get you, that your insight. Double down on feeding yourself and your curiosity, and then finding a way to take the things that you've learned or the things that's unique about you and serving other people, and you'll be rewarded. The universe will reward you greatly for it.
I appreciate you saying that, because my dirty 30 is in January, and I'm already like, my life is over. I'm not doing what I want to do yet. And so I feel very solid of what my purpose is. And I love having you as a positive influence and support person in my life as well, to kind of remind me like, no, this can be a real thing. This can really be tangible. And we got to respect divine timing. Yeah.
But then, you know, it's so wild to me. I love talking about this probably as much as doing this work, is like how when something truly resonates with you, everything gets into perspective. Like, I was up all last night and I didn't feel like a weekend, you know, like right now we're used to weekends because somebody tells you you got to stop working. Right now, like today could be, is today Saturday? Because I don't know. Because I'm going to be hustling today. I'm going to be working tomorrow. And it's not that sort of like hustle mentality, like go get it.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's like,
joy.
This thing, I'm feeding this baby, I'm growing this plant that's going to bear fruit, that's going to feed not just me, but so many other people. And it's truly needed. So yeah, like that energy, that doesn't go away when you find the thing that works for you. And I'm glad that you found it. Like, you're not even dirty yet. Shit.
I'm not even in my prime.
Yeah, you kidding me? Oh shit, you got so much time on your hands. But I love it. Yeah.
So talk to us about your creative process. So before you go shoot a scene, what do you need? Do you have to light some candles? Do you need music? What does that look like? Prep work, like what the hell do you need? I don't know shit about cameras or nothing, lighting, none of that. So what does it take? So what's your creative process like? And what does it look like a day in the life of Brian Duane getting ready to shoot a scene for Black Touch?
Yeah, it's me crying in my bed for 20 minutes. it's like a compilation of different things. I spent a lot of time watching YouTube to understand how to like really calibrate the camera and the colors and the exposure for a scene. I spent a lot of time understanding or teaching myself cinematography and like what we view as like a quality frame or color quality image, because there's not like a lot of similarities between shot after shot after shot that we see in high production content in movies and commercials and television shows. The things that are similar across all of that are are replicatable. Like, but we just need to like study it and say, okay, if I were to create that frame in this scene, people are going to think, yo, that looks so good. That looks like a movie. What was that? And it's that simple. Like, just learn, like, just in terms of visuals, because then there's acting and all other things. But, you know, in terms of visuals, like, I study the cinematography stuff all the time. So the process is like multi-layered. It's like learning deeper, like learning broader and broader things, and then narrowing it down to like this particular scene. So normally what I do is I start with the people, then we come up with a time and a place. So if I'm shooting during the day and it's inside of somebody's pool, or, you know, in a particular room at an Airbnb, or on the top rooftop of some place, but it's nighttime, all of these things are what I start with to influence the story. Mm-hmm. So most people, most writers will sit and write a story, and then you hand that over to a production company, and they will go find the actor, find, you know, the set designer and all this other stuff. And they're starting with this story, and they fill the gap in, just because they've got tons of money and resources to do so. My particular case, and I would say for anybody who wants to do a story, even if it's not erotic, you start with what your limitations are, and then you start to imagine things that allow it to be different or to be interesting. So I'll give you an example. So there was the first scene that I dropped this year. So a pregnant couple, and I think it was called, damn, there's 50 of them now. I can't but
I feel like I know the scene. Is it the scene where
it literally dropped on the first of January, which was a Friday, which is why I drop on Fridays. There's no like magic to it. I was like, I'll just keep doing this every week. And oh, the first day is a Friday. Let me do that. Overdue. Yeah, I think the name of it was overdue, because, you know, play on words. And also the fact that so the concept was this. We knew where we were going to shoot. I knew that this was a couple, but and one of the, you know, like the woman's pregnant, like very pregnant, very visibly pregnant. So first off, I didn't want it to just be about a couple who are already together and like they had wake up and have morning sex. That's cool and all, but it doesn't like really add any tension or drama. And
it's not spicy enough.
Yeah, it doesn't really keep our attention, right? Like if you see somebody, that's why there's so much fighting in like reality TV, because there's no drama, there's no reason to watch. And if you were to sit and watch a regular ass person get up and go through their day, you will fall asleep at the wheel.
Doing regular shit.
You feel me? Like, it's boring as shit, right? So that means that for a story to have some bite, you have to have some sort of conflict. So I was like, y'all can't be in a relationship. And then I sort of thought it through. Then, you know, I realized, well, they got a couch, and then she could be in the bedroom. And so it's sort of like, this is probably the more fun part of it for me. Is coming up with the story, communicating that to the talent, and then trying my best to execute it and think about it shot by shot. And this is very like labor intensive, but it ends up being, you know, more interesting than, you know, bone chicky wow wow in a room with one mic, you know. So what I ended up doing with the story, just to close it out, is that she's a coworker. These two are coworkers, and we started in the morning after she shows up after having a fight with the father of her child. And so we see her sort of like watching him sleep. And then by the time he wakes up, she's gone. And then they meet together in the bedroom. And through a short conversation, we learned that they're both coworkers, that she had a fight with the father of her child, because he hasn't had sex with her in 5 months, because he saw the baby move at some point. It was like, oh shit, I'm not going in there. You know, So she's like horny as hell, and she's like looking him up and down. And that's sort of like where the scene starts. So it's very simple, but it also has some level of conflict, some level of like, oh shit, really?
Watch out. Those work husbands. Those work husbands are a problem. Yeah,
they will long dick her. You feel me? And you will be like, damn. You feel me? Anyway, so that was that story. And that's sort of how the process was. Like, I don't like burn incense or meditate or anything like that. It's kind of like a fluid thing. Like, how can I take the resources I have and turn it into a story that I find interesting? Like when I dealt with, I did a scene with Kinknik, there was 5 of them, 3 women, 2 guys. And I sat down and I thought about the whole, like, what could happen with this many people where also I know what their limitations are. So like, mm-hmm. this person's willing to do this and that person's not. So I have to sort of like play around with what it is they can actually do that will serve the story. So that's the process that I go through. It's not, I work backwards from the limitations to create a story.
No, that makes sense. So I know you have like a million scenes up. What was the hardest scene for you to shoot or the easiest? And do you have a favorite scene?
So the hardest scene was, this is a scene called, it's a sequel actually, and it was a scene called Never Look Back Again. And it's sort of like, the story is essentially about a woman who's leaving her husband for a dom, and it's like an old dom, and it still leans into that erotica concept where she had this experience before she got married and she decided to sort of like live a normal life, but she could not let go of this desire to be whipped and tied and all sorts of stuff. So she basically leaves her husband, and that's the gist of the concept. But the second story was a little bit more involved, and it's like, now there's an argument with the husband, and I ended up shooting like 4 different places. And we shot with like 4 or 5 people over throughout the whole thing. I'm in it, you know, there's dialogue, and I went super hard in this story. And then because I'm not a production company, I didn't learn this from from being in it. I'm sitting now trying to edit this stuff, and it's like, oh man, I forgot to record that part. And like, how am I gonna make that thing make sense? And it was challenging only because I think I didn't grow into that. I was just like excited to like tell this story, and I took my time like planning a lot of it out, but it was really the execution I ran out of steam. Because going to 4 different places, picking up all my gear, packing it away,
resetting it back
out and setting up. Ooh. It was like, by the end of the day, it was a long day. By the end, I was just like, cut. All right, thank you.
I'm out. I'm out.
Yeah, we got it.
Wrap it up.
Where in a big production, you have like a person who's like monitoring the script, and you've got somebody who makes sure that the light is the same every time, every angle, and you know, continuity, people who are there to continue, like figure out the continuity and all that stuff. And the director is just going like, this is the vision I have. We're going to execute
this. Make it happen.
So there's like several minds, not just my mind, trying to build a bigger story. And that's why that was probably the most difficult scene to do. The easiest one was the Kink Night series, because it wasn't planned. So it's like the total opposite. It wasn't planned. I got invited to like a kickback, and that kickback turned into
a kink night.
Kink night, word. I had no clue what they were going to do. Like, nobody told me. Nobody said, hey, we're going to be here, and I'm going to tie this guy. So first thing they started off is mummifying Chad.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
They split it open, and then they put electrodes on his balls, and I looked to my left, and this, you know, like, this lady's getting a pussy ate and, like, coming over and over and over again, and they're playing all this music, and oh, my gosh. It was I tried my best to get all of that to show up in the scene because it was so much. And this is just what I just mentioned was just the first part of the night. And then King Hef did a scene with Mo. I think her name is it's Mo Duh, right? On Twitter and Instagram. But you know, the second segment of that scene was just us in a room and me setting up quick lights and just letting them do their thing and record that. And then the final segment of it was Madame Carmen.
Yes, pegging. I think Darling Nikki. Darling Nikki. Yeah, I remember the scene.
I'm like, so I shoot all of this stuff sort of like on a whim. I'm holding a camera in my hand. I didn't know this was gonna happen. I get home and I'm looking back at the footage like, holy shit, that's a lot of
mad shit here.
And all of it's real. You understand? Yeah. So it's not like I had to instruct this person, like, now I want you to do X, Y, and Z. They were just doing their thing. And I was making sure I got good visuals of it all. The King Night Seas was the easiest to capture because there was no planning. And to edit was pretty straightforward.
That's a fire ass scene. I remember that. That's the first time I've seen like mummification and was like attracted to it. Like, this looks I want to do the rapping, not being wrapped.
Not being wrapped? No, I got to see you wrapped up, man.
Nah, I need to. I'm seeing you.
You need to get wrapped.
I'll do the rapping. I thought it was lit that he was wrapped and his dick was just out.
She's like shocking him.
Yeah.
And I shot it in slow mo. That was like the first time I shot slow mo, right? So his face, that whole expression of his face blooming into like, oh my God. And like, I was there capturing that. And also I found some songs that really helped.
Oh, music selection.
The music selection was so good for that set. So yeah, I had fun.
It all comes together really well. So how do you find people to work with? And do you ever have any like issues where like you have a diva on set or the chemistry between the people working together is an issue or anything like that? And like, how do you navigate it? Is there anyone or any type, you don't have to call them out, but have you ever worked with someone you're like, you know what? No, it's a no for me. I can't work with you. So yeah. How do you find people? And what's the chemistry like for them on set?
A lot of there's a couple of ways. So either people are directly, they come to me directly that they're already in the industry in some way. They have OnlyFans. They want to do something different. Usually that's how people find me. But there's also a form on my website, which at this point is like 230 people across U.S. who submitted to be in a scene. And that's a lot of people, but they're also like all over the place, right? And what I've learned to do, which I wasn't doing in the beginning, but I learned to do is have calls in advance to like suss out to vet them, because it isn't just enough for me to have people in a scene. They need to be attracted to what Black Touch is about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get guys who are like, yeah, I saw it. I'm like, I gotta get in. I gotta get part of this. I'm like,
sure? Are you just trying to get pussy? You must not get pussy.
Yeah, like, and you want to do it on camera? That's not as easy as you think, boss. Because I've had that, you know, like, it's a challenge. Trust.
Performance anxiety is a real thing, too.
It's a real thing. Yeah. And the more you talk about it, the more it pushes, you know, like, the more the penis stays down. You feel me? Like, under the wire now. So you already have to be of a mindset, like, I'm excited to do this. And kind of an exhibitionist already. But when a camera is on you and it's like lights in the room, it changes the dynamic. So yeah, so I most of the time, what I've learned to do is essentially sit and talk and have these conversations. And I have because I'm from an IT background, and I'm probably a big data guy. So I sit and I collect a lot of information. So we will have a conversation, and I'll ask you, what are you open to doing? Do you have a partner that you would work with? Do you already have a website or content, a place where you post content? And I'll have like this whole conversation with you, and I'm filling in this form so that in the future, when I'm ready to like put a scene together, I will reach out to you. Are you still interested in shooting? Because now I know a little bit more about what motivates you and what have you. And so that's the way I go about casting, which is why sometimes you'll see like repeat people, because it's sort of like sex. Like you could have a good first time, but you know, if you get to learn how to work with the same person over and over again, you learn their body, you learn, you know, things like that. It's the same thing with casting. If you know how Black Touch is, and I'm not a weirdo, and I'm not gonna like be holding the camera in one hand and my dick in the other and being weird, you know that like I'm serious about this stuff, and like the quality is X. It comes out to be like this. The second time is better. The third time is better. And at first, I used to be kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't have the same people featured over and over again. But yes, I can. Watch me. And I think really at the end, at the heart of it, it's really more about the experience. If the experience is different, if we're not laying in the bed and getting pounded, by the same guy over and over again, part two, part three, part four. It's like, okay, yeah,
we got that.
Yeah, we got it. But like, if this time you're tied up, or it's a new partner, or it's a new environment, or a new scenario, that's the thing that for me, it holds more weight than it's the same person. Divas on set, no. I've never dealt with anybody as a diva. For the most part, people are kind of happy to work with me, and they're very patient because you have to be. And when you show up, you don't know what you're going to say or what you're going to do. And we spend probably like 15 to 20 minutes, and I go through the script and I tell you who you are and what your motivation is and all of that. And then we spend a lot of time. If you see a scripted scene, we spend more time shooting the scripted part than we do the erotic, sensual, intimate part. And so I sit and I will moment by, like, it's shot for like 2-3 lines of dialogue at a time. And then I'm like, yeah, that didn't go right. Let's try that again. There's a lot of time put into that part of it. And then, so people are usually very gracious, and they're excited about being in something that feels like a higher production thing. Mm-hmm. And I try my best to make it feel like, oh, look, it feels like a movie that we're doing. And it also ends up looking and feeling like a movie in the final product.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I've ever dealt with issues with a particular person that I can't. There are people that kind of let me down, like we were booked and they didn't show up or call or stuff like that. And I just write them off. But I also don't take any.
You're canceled.
Yeah. I won't ever call their name out or anything, but like, I don't take any of this personal. I just despise wasting, like having my time wasted and wasting time of other people, and that I'm not budging on. So like, if you did flake on me, that's cool that you can work with me in the future now that it's a multi-billion-dollar company. Boop. But you put the nail in the coffin, not me.
You're finished.
Go ahead and find somebody else. It's probably at this point, it's probably copies. Go ahead and do it. But so there's that. And then talking about the dynamics between partners. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, when there's actual intimacy, especially up until this point, because I'm kind of transitioning out of that, people are already partnered. Like they have sex and they're in a relationship to some degree. So usually any challenges and issues are interpersonal problems from the relationship. And I'm just freaking patient. I will wait. And I'm like, listen, if we don't, we don't got to do this, bro. That's another thing I don't think that people are aware of. I'm willing to drop a scene. I don't care if you're in the middle of the thing. I don't care if you shot it and it completely done. What dropping a scene every week taught me is that no individual scene has more weight than the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took time and resources to probably like book this location and get these people here and all this other stuff. And yeah, it's a letdown, but that's still just 1 week out of my year, right? Yeah. So like I don't put so much weight that I put pressure on people to either perform or to do things that they want to do. Especially with the women, we're talking about in a regular mainstream environment, there's a lot of money involved, there's a lot of people around. It's like this sort of, okay, you're here to do the DP with so and so and X and Y, and we're gonna shoot and get on your knees and start doing this. He's gonna come in hard. And now none of this is natural, and we know this, and we can see and feel it in the scene. What I am an advocate for is that everyone knows what we're doing up front. So like, in a creative call, we sit and we talk about all the details. Like, are you open to him going down on you? Are you interested and open to doing that? What are your requirements for it? We talk about STD panels and things like that. So even with all that set up in the middle of the scene, in the heart of the scene, if I personally sense this person's not like fit to shoot or not comfortable, I will
pull the plug
and I will say, listen, 1,010%. Everything I just told you, I will say to them. I'm like, these scenes are important to me, but not more than the people I'm working with. Mm-hmm. And I will say this thing, which I say all the time, is that I cannot build something for the community and hurt people in it at the same time. And for that reason, I have pretty good will with everybody I work with, because I don't prioritize the scene over them at any moment. I don't care if I packed all my shit out of the car, which is the most labor intensive thing, and I put all the gear up and the light stands and everything. And then if I'm looking at you and you look uncomfortable, or I will pull you aside and be like, listen, man, I know there's a lot of pressure on you. You're like, right now there's all this pressure, but you need to be okay. You know, you need to be okay. So we have like a real conversation. And I haven't had to have that conversation many times, maybe like twice. And each time it they assured me they're okay. And I'm like, look me in my face. We were going to shoot this, it's going to get published. And I prefer to not shoot a scene if I don't feel you're comfortable, if I don't feel you're really present, you know, because that translates.
That translates on camera.
Yeah, people, you know, I've had people who are close to me hit me up like, yeah, I don't know about that moment. Like right here, it seems like she was off. And I'm, you know, and I'll be honest, like that is a true moment, but it isn't the whole scene. It wasn't the whole thing. But yeah, like I definitely care that people are enjoying it and hopefully receiving pleasure in the scene, and that it comes up and translates properly.
Yeah, no, I respect that. I appreciate all of that integrity. And I feel like when I watch your work, everyone looks aroused. Like, that's one of the things that would turn me off when I would watch adult content, is I would literally watch a scene and sis looks dry and my boy is just going to town. And I just don't connect with, I can just tell that the sounds she's making is sounds of like discomfort and pain, not arousal. And like, you can just tell. And I'm like, I just can't get behind this, but I never feel that way. And when I watch your work, it really translates as like, everyone's enjoying themselves. It just happens to be captured. And I get to watch and engage with this.
And I get to shoot. I feel blessed.
You get a front row seat. So let's talk about you shooting. Do you get aroused while you shoot, or you're like, I got my production cap on and, you know, it's not a thought. Or you're like, I need to run to the bathroom real quick. Like, what's it like for you?
Pause, break, time out, everybody. I'll be right back. Yeah, no, that literally has never happened. Because, well, maybe I'm going to be honest. Let me be honest. I believe there may have been two scenes where it was so intense that it broke through my I guess it's a wall, because it definitely doesn't happen automatically. It's really more about like, for me, I'm a sapiosexual and I guess demisexual, so the arousal just doesn't happen because a naked person's in front of me, or even mm-hmm. sex is up in front of me. What I'm focused on in a moment, which is why the work looks like it is what I'm seeing, the angle, the exposure, the way the light is hitting the body, you know, how all of that comes together is what my primary focus is at any moment during the scene. So I guess I'm not present enough to like truly get aroused by anything. And then like when I go home and I'm playing the stuff back, I'm like, yo, like it's actually like I'm watching it for the first time. I was at a dungeon party a few weeks ago, and there was like this forced orgasm scene, and I'm so close.
You got some backsplash.
Well, so she's laying on the floor and I'm at her head with my camera and my gimbal, and he's hovering over her, and he has like this, he has a vibrator on her clit, and he's like doing edging. I think it's edging, where he's counting. He's like, we're going to take our time and you get to come when I say it. He's slowly counting. And as he's counting up, and then he starts pumping her with like this dildo, and she's exploding. If you can imagine, it's like a visceral full body orgasm that she's trying to hold back, and she's screaming, no, please stop. You know, like the whole, it was so intense, but I don't remember it. I was there
shooting. In the moment, doing your thing.
I was so close. I was like, oh shit. I didn't realize he fisted her at some point. Wow. I didn't realize he was using two dildos and working both holes. I didn't realize until I got home.
And watched the playback. Like,
what the fuck was I shooting?
And you was up close and personal.
And I was there. So yeah, it's not a thing where I'm so into it and I'm like, oh yeah, keep going. It doesn't feel like that. It always feels like I'm here for the audience. Yeah. I'm looking from the audience perspective and I have the responsibility to make sure that I'm capturing it in such a way that I can create something of value. So I'm never very, very present in that way.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Do you have some adult content creators that you like who inspire you?
There's a bunch. I gotta say, like, she's on the site a lot. And she's the person who started sucking dick on camera for the first time. And I was like, wait, what's going on? I didn't know who she was when I met her. She already had a following, but Darling Nikki, you know,
I love her. I'm obsessed with her.
She's easily loved. You feel me?
Yeah, because I'm just
first of all, she's
her.
Like the cutest.
She is
bubbliest. And the reason why I love like the work she does is not even just that she worked with me, but like the work that she does is because I know that's her. She's not like pretending for the audience, and if she's feeling sad, if she's feeling disconnected, she will communicate that. And it's a level of intimacy that she has with her audience that makes her, first off, I aspire, not maybe at that level, right? I'm not going to share my own sexual stuff online, but I aspire to be able to communicate these things with the growing audience for Black Touch.
Mm-hmm.
To communicate how I'm, what's going on, like my struggles and trials and stuff like that. And I'm just not a great communicator, and she very much is. And she travels all over the fucking place, and she's like on a boat in the middle of the Caribbean this moment, and then she's on the top of a roof in Manhattan popping a pussy. I'm just like, this woman, God bless her. That's all. God bless this woman. But yeah, definitely one of my a big inspiration for me. Also, Manon Carmen, because mm-hmm. not only does she create the content, but she is a sort of like a force to build a platform for other creatives, and she has a team and she fosters them. I have so much connections and so much relationships that I'm definitely going to be forgetting somebody. But these are the two people who first popped into my head. Who I definitely admire.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. So I have some rapid fire questions. So I posted a story question asking my following, what are some things that they want to ask you? So okay. Here we go. So the first question is, what do you feel like the adult entertainment industry is missing? And how do you feel like Black Touch brings that element?
So because whenever something is born out of generating funds, money, you know, like mm-hmm. participates in capitalism, you know, if that is the highest thing, then it will always eat people up, because that's what capitalism does. It creates a slave class to serve it. And if you look, you know, the whole goal is to push this value and push money up to the top of this pyramid or whatever. So anything that indiscriminately just wants to make more money every year will eventually hurt people. So you have to have like a bigger goal, a bigger purpose. In my particular case, like I'm trying my best to serve an underserved community. Primarily, like when I shoot, I focus on Black women, because right now the mainstream isn't like, it's a forgotten.
Not segment. Fucking with us.
Like at all. Us. Like, You would think, I bet you, you know, once, you know, Black Touch gets on their radar, they're going to be like, holy shit, there's like money behind Black women. Like, yeah, you've heard of Beyonce name? Like, I'm sorry. Like, what about, you know, like, look at everything that they freaking focus on explodes. And I think part of it is because, you know, they have this massive buying power because they're so educated and well, you know, they've grown into their own and have like their own economy, right? If somebody's making body oils, that person could be a millionaire if they market properly to Black women, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, because they are the mother of creation, right? Like, you're not, when you serve them, she can only bless you, you know.
Mm.
And I don't think that, you know, that's completely lost in the whole concept of creating erotica most of the time. So that's my thing, is that I believe it's missing a soul, the mainstream. And that if you do focus on something higher, you're not gonna probably make as much money, but you'll be fine, and you will make the world a better place. The same reason why OnlyFans is like switching now. Their goal is to keep making more money, and it's threatened by the fact that there's all this content that they have no documentation for. So they're like, okay, we're gonna drop the people who made us billionaires and then go do this thing over here, instead of taking that money and reinvesting.
Refunnel it, yeah.
Right, like, and teaching people, okay, this is what it would take for you to be in compliance. This is how you do it. And they could, but they just want to get bigger, and they got the money now.
Oh, that 20% wasn't enough? Because baby, that 20% used to hurt. Like, you want 20% of my coins? I worked hard for this.
Well, I will tell you something, because people are reaching out to me now, and after Black OnlyFans decides to, you know, do a pivot, they reach out to me and they're like, hey, can you help me build a website? I'm like, it's not that easy. Because I'm creating the content, but I'm also like publishing. Mm-hmm. I build every page manually at this point because I don't have like a system to do that. It's a lot. I have a relationship directly with the credit card company. All of this has like a level of technical know-how that you can't just
wake up and just have it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that 20% was to pay them for all the stuff that you don't have to think about, like people managing accounts and stuff like that. So I understand it. Maybe 20 is a little bit much.
It's a little steep.
It is steep. And you have to think about it like there's a credit card transaction. A portion of that, especially because it's adult content, has a higher transaction fee. So out of that 20%, they're probably only getting 15 of every dollar of the transaction that went through. So they're not getting the whole pie. They're just making sure that they're
good.
That they're getting is extra good.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So the next question we have is, if you could be in a scene, what would it be and why? Maybe it doesn't have to be a scene you've done already, but...
But if I were to craft a scene that I was going to be in?
That you're going to be in. Oh, and not just say a few words, but what would it be?
Oh, God. This is a rapid fire thing. I'm going to just jump off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I probably would be a male. This is a stupid idea. A male madam.
Okay.
But yeah, that's known as a pimp.
A pimp? Yeah, I was going to say so. Essentially.
Yeah. So I'd be a pimp. But the idea is to approach it with compassion and all that stuff. Like, I'm partnering with people. And it's like, OnlyFans is a pimp to some degree, right? Like,
yeah,
they took 20% of your dollar. Like, all right, baby, how much we make this month? You know, but really it's about your intention, right? So I don't, you know, like, I'm not a natural person to hurt someone, but like, I am envisioning a space where women can essentially do what they want to do, get paid, and I would just be there protecting them. But I guess that's what pimps say they do, but they also don't benefit the women. Like, it's like, I guess that's a bad ass. That's a bad thing.
Don't feel bad. So this is super random, but I see how easy it is to want to be a pimp. So I went to Chicago one time with my old team, and we went to a strip club, and I was not impressed. Maybe it was just like some Atlanta shit. I need to see big ass. I need to see bitches doing trick pole tricks, all of that, right? Yeah. But one of my colleagues, he's a little, you know, off the chain, asked one of the ladies there, how much y'all fucking for, right? Just asked her, like, how much y'all, what's the rate for tonight? When she said her rate, I was like, oh, baby girl, like, I need to manage you. I was like, I just felt this feeling of like, no, I want to manage her. Like, this can, right, you cannot be selling pussy for this. Like, that's not enough. Then I was like, oh shit, bitch, you want to be a pimp. So you want to be, so I can totally understand leading with compassion of like, compassion, no, yeah. I want to take care of this sex worker. And then you're like, no, yeah, bitch, yeah, you're a pimp now.
It's more like it is like that, because a lot of the people I work with, they're, you know, or I come across, I've spent probably more time talking about them marketing and building their mm-hmm. awareness and their brand and stuff like that, because of the desire for them to succeed. You know, like this game, when you rely on a platform, let's say like OnlyFans or even Instagram, they're in control. They don't own anything. And I'm always mm-hmm. telling people, build a million.
Own your shit.
You have a true asset that you could leverage if you have to. But if my Instagram goes away tomorrow, I've got a ton of people on my mailing list that I could just reach out to and say, hey guys, get the word out that Black Tux is here now, right? Mm-hmm. But most people don't have that capacity. So I spend a lot of time, you know, sex work. It's like you could be a barber in a barbershop or you could own the barbershop. Mm. There's two different dynamics with the client. There's two different dynamics with the work. There's two different dynamics with the upkeep and the operations of the work that you're doing. And most people are more inclined to be a barber. But I'm always saying to build something long, you know, like have longevity and to grow something, you probably want to like try your hand at owning, you know? And so that's what I kind of like talk to people about, because I'm in that space now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm definitely about owning my own shit. I want to own everything. I'm not Black Touch website ready, but you know, I definitely am. I'm with that. And I mean, everyone doesn't want to be their own boss right. necessarily right. too. So, I mean, that's entrepreneurship right. is not this just easy thing to do. So, but I'm definitely for Black people owning our own shit for sure. So the last follower question is, if we didn't have the societal boundaries that we do, so if we weren't such prudes and like sensitive about sex and everything else, where would you see Black Touch showcase, or where would you like to see it showcase?
Wow.
Aren't they good questions?
I don't know if there's a place. They are great questions, by the way. So I don't know if there's a place I'd want. Well, I guess a mainstream television. I don't watch TV. So I don't know where. I'm not very familiar with what's like out there now. Like, you know, maybe featured in on like 2020, where they go into depth about why this was even necessary, that there's a pro-Black erotica site and what it takes. But I would say maybe in like a news format site would probably, or a news format show that explores it. That's probably would be the place that I would want to see it. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I appreciate you coming to chat with me. I had a really, really great time.
Yeah.
So again, you can find Ryan Duane at BLK Touch on Instagram and Twitter. Become a member of blacktouch.com. Like, you will not regret it. You can get my coins every month from now, forever and forever and forever. Yeah. So yeah. Before I let you go, finish this statement for me. We should normalize.
You should normalize sexual exploration and freedom in our community, and that's like across the board, because we have like this sort of superimposed social constraint on how we're supposed to be. A lot of us never really find out who we are and what our true capacity for pleasure is. And for that reason, we had generations and generations of people who are repressed, and you don't have a very long span of time on this planet. So while you're here, wild the fuck out. For me, do not go to your grave with regrets. If you have a desire to be with the same sex, or you're pansexual, but no one around you that grew up with you is that open and that you can express it to them, you know, living for other people, and I know you will hear this everywhere, but living for other people usually is the quickest way to like a wasted life. You know, even in my own life, I think I spent way more time doing what I thought I should be doing versus finding out who I was and what I really wanted to do. And when I finally got a chance to do that, the heavens opened up. You know, I've been blessed with relationships and financially, and circumstances got better. I have a free level of freedom now that I couldn't have imagined. And the future is way brighter. And so I will always tell people, explore your ass off and worry about your joy first and foremost.
Yes, I appreciate that. And that's such a high note to end us on. Big shout out to our featured guest, Brian Duane. I want to leave you with some questions to reflect on or just to spark some dialogue. How do you or how can you consume porn ethically? Do you get a visceral reaction after you've watched porn? So post-orgasm, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings when you consume porn? What porn are you into? And is there any type of porn that you enjoy that you're scared to share with others? And what is the difference between something that is pornographic or erotic to you? You can connect with me on socials at @SashadaRose_ on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find me on YouTube and Patreon. Don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast. Thank you for listening.